Welcome to the Picture House podcast. Today we have a very special podcast in honour of the World War II true story thriller Operation Mincemeat. We were delighted to have been invited to speak with all the ensemble cast, including Colin Firth, Matthew McFadden, Jason Isaacs, Johnny Flynn, Penelope Wilton and Kelly MacDonald, as well as director John Madden and writer Ben McIntyre.
In 5 weeks, 100,000 British forces will strike Sicily's southern shore.
Unfortunately, the Nazis know of our intentions. So we're going to play a humiliating trick on Hitler.
First up is the pairing of Colin Firth and Matthew McFadden, who play Ewan Montagu and Charles Cholmondeley, who headed up Operation Mincemeat.
What a fascinating story. Were either of you aware of Operation Mincemeat before receiving the script, or was it one of those rare manna from heaven script moments?
The latter, manna from heaven.
I'd seen the film The Man Who Never Was in the 60s, which is a treatment of the same subject, but a very, very different telling of it. And so I was, it absolutely enthralled me as a kid. So I had that reference point for him. Apart from that, I knew nothing. I'd never heard the words Operation Mincemeat. I knew nothing else. And then we both read Ben McIntyre's book after we got the scripts.
And I was very struck by the emphasis on the internal lives of the characters. So I wonder if that's where it differs from the original film, Colin, because you don't often see that, do you? The real horrific stress of every decision that's being made in those particular situations, and seeing how emotionally vulnerable men, particularly your two characters, were. I wondered, Colin, if you could tell me about capturing this aspect and whether you felt that this was a new point of view for this kind of war film.
Yes, I mean, we're by no means the first people to look at the psychology of people involved in warfare, but I think it is very much focused on that. I mean, we spend an awful lot of time in rooms, conjuring with ideas, visions, things that are dreamt up, which could just be fanciful. I mean, if there wasn't, if there weren't the stakes, then they probably would have just been trying to write novels or something, or yeah, arguing perhaps in a courtroom where the stakes can also be very high. But I think you're right. I think it's thrown back to this rather compressed, almost like a chamber piece, really, of seeing how not only the stakes, but also in terms of the war, but the stakes in the relationships they have with each other.
Yeah. Well, I definitely felt that, particularly with Charles, because he had the added stress of having to spy on his friend. And I just felt that your relationship was such an interesting story arc with your outside stresses. And yeah, Charles, and I thought particularly that was cruel to your character, who seems so honourable.
Oh, being sort of compromised by.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really interesting. I don't know how much that was sort of, we brought that to the, we added that to the script. I don't think that was, but it does. It's all part of the spirit of the thing, because they do become terribly invested in this operation, and emotionally and imaginatively. And yeah, it was fascinating.
Yeah.
I love the idea that there was a secret, the idea of the 20 committee, which was a sort of pun on a double cross, but they met every Thursday. And I think in real life, Charles was the secretary of this committee, but they were there solely to run agents, I think, and to dream up sort of insane ways to fool the enemy. I mean, that's what they would do. And they would, and Ian Fleming was part of it, and it was chaired by a guy called John Masterman, who was a novelist and Oxford Don. And, so they were very sort of creative bunch of people. Fascinating.
Yes, it was really surprising just to see how imaginative and fun and creative that whole situation could be. What were your takeaways from it, Colin? What, in being immersed in this world and seeing a whole other sort of side to the World War II operation, what do you take away from having been part of this incredible story?
Well, how much cleverer people are than me, for a start. I think we all felt way out of our depth in terms of the people we were portraying. So that also, I think that the emotional toll, I mean, I think we a lot of storytelling, and indeed the news will tell you about the emotional toll of combat. But I think the kind of work that these men were doing created casualties of a different sort, perhaps. You know, these weren't just people who were brilliant in terms of their logical prowess. You know, they were very, very clever men, but it did have to be very lateral in the nature of its thinking. I mean, creativity is not something that necessarily does conform to logical process. They had to really, you know, employ this whole business of corkscrew thinking, as Churchill called it. It was wild, really, and absurd.
Yes, perfect. Thank you so much. I have to wrap now, but thank you. Good luck with the film. It's fantastic.
Next, we have Kelly MacDonald and Penelope Wilton, who play Jean Leslie and Hester Leggett, two women integral to the operation's success.
So congratulations, both of you, for bringing us Jean and Hester. For me, this is one of the few World War II films I've seen where women of multiple ages are at the table as more or less equals. Penelope, would you agree with this? And just how refreshing was it to get the script for a character like Hester?
Ooh. Very. I thought she was wonderfully drawn, as I think all the characters, but Hester was particularly interesting because she's not a romantic character. She's a woman who's on a level with the men she's in the room with and the women, and she plays a very integral role in the story and coming up with the ideas. So I was fascinated to play her.
And Kelly, similarly, your character Jean, she had such depth and dimension. What were your thoughts on her?
Oh, I love Jean. I could play Jean forever. I really could have made that film forever quite happily. Just love being in a room with all these people. But I loved Jean because you do get to know little bits about what her history might have been. You realise as the story goes on, she's this very vital, interesting, interested woman. And she's got this history, though. You realise she's had a great love and lost them. And is this single woman in this very dark time. And she's just living her life. And in a way, the war has made a lot possible for her.
And I loved in your particular relationship how your characters themselves defied assumption, and in your relationship what could have been turned into sort of, I don't know, you know, quite a hostile situation. You were both so wise and calm, and I loved that perspective for a female relationship. Can you talk to me a bit about that, Penelope?
Oh, well, yes, and I think it exists, you see.
yeah. And also the writer supportive was, women.
Yes, who knew?
the writer, the script writer is a woman, so she obviously understands women, and those relationships do exist, very much so. Myself and Kelly have very much that sort of relationship. Mm. I don't know how wise it is, but it's very calm.
It's not wise, she's wiser than me. But what I was going to say is, someone earlier was talking about how Penelope plays these morally centered, good people. And when she was being told that, I thought, what about me? Because that's what I usually get cast as. So we're similar in that regard, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kelly, I just wondered what your thoughts were on the teamwork perspective, because often you don't get men and women of all ages equally at the table.
Yeah, well, they're not equally. I mean, there's scenes where it's all men around the table and I'm at the side on a different little school desk typing and note-taking and what have you. But I think her voice is heard amongst the men. You know, there's these great scenes in the Gargoyle Club that we filmed, and where they would go to talk shop because they thought it's safe, it's noisy, there's a lot going on, and definitely, you know, we got to contribute ideas that didn't fall on deaf ears, you know.
And just, Penelope, I thought it looked like there was such a joyous chemistry between all of you. Was that the case?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was.
Yes. I think if you get a whole lot of actors who like each other and have worked together, quite a few of us have worked together with each other beforehand. I hadn't actually worked with Kelly, but I loved it. You get us, and we were in a room for a long time, either there or in the Gargoyle Club. So, and the men, of course, behaved very badly. We were very
well. It was really sweet, though, wasn't it? Because they were, they didn't know each other.
No, they kept laughing.
The two Darcys didn't know each other before, and they were trying to make each other laugh the most.
Yes, we were behaved extremely well.
Amazingly.
Of course, of course. Thank you both so much for your time today, and good luck with this wonderful film.
Thank you.
Next, we have Johnny Flynn and Jason Isaacs, who play the real Ian Fleming and Admiral Godfrey, the inspiration behind the fictional M of the Bond films.
Lovely to meet you both.
Hello.
Hi. I assume you're both familiar with Picture House Cinemas?
Yes.
Yes.
God bless Picture House Cinemas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for saying that. Johnny, you play Ian Fleming. He is such a globally recognised name, but who actually is he? And what did you want to bring to the portrayal? He seemed fun, I would say, and quite unusual.
Yeah, it's hard. I think a lot of writers are, you know, firstly not as exciting as the heroes and heroines that they create. And I think that was probably true of Fleming. But because of what we know about his later life and the brilliant character that he created, the well-loved character, even if he's potentially a bit sort of in the shadows, that's interesting to us as an audience. So what we know about him is what's interesting against what I present. So I was aware of that, but also was trying to play the reality of the situation, which is that he doesn't know that he's going to become a famous writer. But it was fun to, you know, raise my eyebrow occasionally and have a cigarette hanging out my mouth. And I imagined that he wanted to be a sort of fantasy version of this person that he is yet to create as well. And there he is with the same rank as the character that he'd create and in some of the same situations. And you see him in the Q Branch scene and is excited by the watch with bezel edges and all that stuff. So it was just fun. It was fun to imagine what would have made him tick and in this really intense situation where the stakes of the whole world and the future of civilization as we know it are resting in his hands or in the community that he finds himself. And it was brilliant. Yeah, I loved thinking about that.
Yeah, and it was an extraordinary stressful situation. I thought Jason, with Admiral Godfrey, he was the killjoy in a way, but he was also the voice of reason, you know, and the original M.
It's a stupid idea.
Yes.
And it shouldn't work. and it put in danger, this plan, all the other many deceptions that he had going on. He's head of naval intelligence. The Allied had a whole bunch of things called Operation Barclay, which Operation Mincemeat was a small part of, where they had created a fake army, fake headquarters in Cairo, a bunch of operations in Greece, fake radio intercepts. And this one idea was going to scupper all of it if it was discovered. And it could so easily have been discovered. And in fact, it does. Those people who come see the film will see how it doesn't just skirt with disaster. It falls fully into the pit of disaster and has to be dragged out of it. So he's the lone voice of sense. From my point of view, I think I might be the lone person saying that when people watch the film.
And for both of you, I mean, I loved how it was presented as a team, teamwork, men and women meeting at the table equally. What are your takeaways from Operation Mincemeat? What would be the message, do you think, of the film, Johnny? And for you personally?
That was the thing that struck me. It's a different type of war film to the kind of, you know, nationalistic kind of jingoistic film. Obviously, there are two sides fighting this war, but it's about the underground thinking that went into it. And so often in the story, we're looking at how these quite amazing, eccentric characters are interacting and relating to each other to come up with these ideas. And it's about thinking rather than fighting. So I like that side of it.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to wrap up. But
oh, sorry.
To everyone all day about it. It's 5 minutes.
No, I don't know that there is a message. The message is, I hope you enjoy your couple of hours in the dark being told a fun and exciting story with a positive ending.
Exactly. Thank you so much, both, and good luck with this fabulous film.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And finally, director John Madden and writer Ben McIntyre.
Congratulations on bringing to screen this extraordinary story where, amongst other things, truth and fiction really do blur. Ben, what inspired you to write the book, and just how incredible was researching for it with this in mind?
Well, as a young boy, actually, I first came across this story because it's part of our national legend in some ways. It's sort of sewn into, it's woven into the kind of post-war mythology, this body that was used for a deception. But I remember thinking when I was very young, actually, if even a quarter of this is true, it's an amazing story. And then Britain started to declassify the wartime intelligence files. That started in about 1996, and it's now routine. It's an extraordinary sea change in British attitudes towards secrecy. And those real files, those genuine files, are extraordinary. I mean, they stand about 4 feet high if you stack them up, and they are thousands of pages of detailed minute by minute, hour by hour depictions of what actually happened. And that's complete gold dust for a non-fiction writer, right down to the marginalia where people are writing in the corners of the pages, "We're going to hell in a handcart here. This is a disaster. We're gonna, you know, we've sent thousands to their death." That's an amazing story. And it contained some very important secrets, actually, including, pivotally to this project, that the identity of the individual whose body was used in the deception. So it's been incredibly exciting. And I've also been so lucky in my timing. I mean, it's just, you know, that I wish I could claim that was my brilliance. It's not. It's just, you know, it's just the way it worked out.
Exactly. And John, I mean, how did you, were you introduced to this? And were there's just, where you have, did you have so much material, like of extraordinary kinds of, like, that can't, yes, be true, but yeah, you had to leave out
the 4 foot of it all, as Ben talks about, is a little bit daunting, actually, as a filmmaker. I mean, I came at it in the best possible way, which is the way Ben would always hope, which is, you know, you read the book, and the book is such a fabulous read, not just because of the nature of the story, but the way the story is told, frankly, which is an invitation to, you know, to somebody like me, because it is so unusual and so vivid and so rich in its kind of thematic meaning and so forth. I mean, to be honest with you, I did feel a little bit paralyzed to begin with at several times in the process of making the film, because the burden of authenticating everything actually meant that it might squash out the part of the story that I think we really need to focus on, which is what's happening to the human beings who are conducting this, you know, because the detail, the level of detail that Ben unearthed, but also was obsessively pursued by the characters who were creating it, could squash out any life at all, really. We just end up with data. So, but very quickly, you know, Michelle and I focused on the human story that was sitting underneath it, because it is, after all, about the creation of a fiction. And that fiction is one where they had to imagine a life for that character, a love life, a family background, a set of beliefs, and so on and so forth. And actually, there's really where the heart of the story is, this fictional life that they created for the man who, of course, does sit at the center of the whole story, which is Glendower Michael, who, as Ben points out, you know, whose identity we discovered in the middle of the 90s. And that also gave an extraordinary kind of emotional undertow to the story. That means you end up from starting in a very absurd world into something profoundly upsetting, moving, dangerous, and terrifying by the end.
Yes, I'm so sorry. I've talked to you both all day about this, but I have to wrap, unfortunately. But
oh, no.
Thank you so much.
It's because we're too damn verbose, that's the problem.
We have to convince Germany that our target is Greece.
The plan begins in Spain, where a corpse will wash up on shore bearing classified letters.
A corpse carrying fake documents.
Many thanks to all the Operation Mincemeat cast and crew who participated in the making of this most unusual Picture House podcast.